Well, hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Whitetail Theories Podcast. Today I'm with Brandon Blatt and Owen Wilkerson, and I'm really excited to talk about things tonight. Owen, he recently moved out to Montana, and he's got some insight about Western hunting coming from the East Coast. And Brandon is Owen's cousin, and he spent a lot of time out in Montana this past year, and he's going to give a lot of insight as well. So let's start it off with Brandon. Why don't you just give a little bit of background on your hunting experience, how long you've been hunting, what your favorite thing to hunt is, and we'll go from there.
So I've been hunting for probably 10 to 12 years now, mainly in Pennsylvania, just whitetail and turkeys. Hunted a couple different states for whitetail. Never had too great of luck with turkeys, but mainly just deer hunting, and you know, spent so much time deer hunting when I was younger, so that's kind of basically just what I did. I hunted deer, and I learned a lot, mainly archery hunting too. You know, I've had a majority of my luck in archery season, and this year I got the chance to go elk hunting in Montana, and wasn't Owen's first time elk hunting, so he had some experience. His dad had some experience, so it wasn't, for me, it wasn't just starting out on my own, knowing nothing. We had a little bit of, you know, to go off of to get started. But basically just spending a lot of time in the woods.
Awesome. And since Brandon's not going to toot his own horn, I want you to, real quick, just talk about what the PA Triple Trophy is and just highlight briefly. I know we could go into a lot of detail about this, but highlight briefly the feat that you had here just the other season.
So the PA Triple Trophy, that is a bear, a whitetail buck, and a turkey all in the same licensing season, which is from, basically you can buy your license in June, and then in the fall there's deer, bear, and a fall turkey season, and then a spring turkey season. So I was pretty fortunate with my bear. Wasn't really hunting for him. I think he was more hunting for me, but it was archery season in our area for bear, and he came by and I stuck him and got my first bear. And then the next day, it's deer archery season at the same time. The next day, I actually missed a buck. Then fast forward a couple weeks, PA deer rifle season comes in. The first morning of rifle season, I shot an 8-pointer. And then in the spring, I shot a gobbler in upstate PA on public land, so that was pretty cool. And I also shot a longbeard in West Virginia on their opening day, so I was pretty fortunate that year.
Yeah, so that's a super awesome accomplishment. I mean, most hunters never, they spend a lifetime hunting and don't get to shoot the triple trophy. It's kind of funny because, you know, the really tough one to get is a PA black bear. I think it's maybe 3% of the population in a given year we'll get to harvest a black bear. And the funny part is, though, a lot of times comes around spring turkey season, because the way that the tradition with the triple trophy works is you have to shoot the gobbler in the spring. And a lot of times that actually plagues guys and haunts them, because they're trying so hard to kill a bird and they ended up, you know, not sealing the deal. So that's a super cool accomplishment. All right, so Owen, sitting over here quiet now. So Owen, how long have you been hunting, and when did you move out to Montana? And just talk about a little bit of the background with what you've done here in PA, and then what you're doing out in Montana right now.
So I started hunting probably about 6 years ago, and that's when I really got into it. And the fall of 2018, I moved out to Montana, and I wasn't able to hunt that year. I was just new to the state. So, but previous to that, back here, you know, I grew up archery hunting, rifle hunting. I got a couple buck, a bear, two under my belt, and one spring gobbler. But we moved out there, you know, we just love hunting so much, and that was the big thing about it. So,
yeah, you know. No, that's awesome. Now, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning here, you guys are cousins, so I'm just genuinely curious, like, Did somebody in the family teach you guys, take you under your wings individually or together, and teach you guys the ropes of hunting, or where did you guys get to learn that?
Owen's dad was pretty big into hunting, so Owen hunted with him, and my dad actually wasn't into hunting at all. So I started to hunt with my grandpa, and he's your traditional old school, old timer PA hunter, you know. You go to one tree every year, and that's where you sit, and you kill a deer, and if you kill one, great. If you don't, you're just happy to go out and hunt. And actually, he didn't archery hunt at all. I just rifle hunted for the first couple of years, and then I thought I'd like to archery hunt. So I asked for a bow for Christmas and got a bow, and then got into it, and I learned a lot from Owen's dad. And pretty much, we both hunted. Our grandpa has some land, and that's where we both hunted a lot. And we both learned a lot about archery hunting together. And we had a lot of fun and did a lot of dumb stuff looking back. But that's how we learn. And, you know, you get pointers here and there, but a lot of it was for us. We went out and we learned the hard way. Just, you know, we used to hunt the same tree stand because we'd always see deer there. And we'd hunt the same tree stand so much. These deer start coming out at night and they're looking up at the tree, looking to see if you're there or not. So then we kind of grew from there, and we both got more successful as the years went on.
No, that's great. So, and it's really cool. I mean, the fact that you guys had the opportunity to grow up and have somebody take you under their wing and teach you that stuff. And that's where a lot of these new guys are getting into the sport. They don't have that. So, you know, doing these podcasts, we're really hoping to help to inspire new hunters and give pointers and help out with the shortcomings that we found where we made mistakes. And I made a lot of the same mistakes that you guys talked about. And I've alluded to that in previous podcasts, and I'll talk about that more as we go. So for tonight, though, I want to really dive into this Western style of hunting. And I want to just mention, Owen, he's only been hunting for about 6 years, but he's only 18 years old. So he hasn't had as much experience as myself and even Brandon here. So Owen, why don't you just talk about the Western thing? What's your favorite thing to hunt out there at this point?
So, I mean, I spent, all fall chasing elk, and my main thing this fall was elk and mule deer. And I couldn't seal the deal with an elk at all, but that's probably one of my favorites. And another big thing that I absolutely fell in love with was high country mule deer hunting. That was, in the snow, late season, when they're in the rut, it's just glass them up and go after them.
Okay.
And get in range, and it's just a blast.
What time of year are you talking then with that?
So the mule deer rut where I am in northwest Montana falls about, I'd say, middle of November.
Okay.
And if you're a week before that, 2 weeks after that, it's all good then.
Okay. And you guys are going archery stuff, or is this with firearms?
So that would be with a rifle. Our rifle season in Montana opens up the last weekend of October.
Got it.
And runs through usually about the end of November. We have a 6 week rifle season, so.
Okay, that's super cool. And when you say like altitude, what altitude are you guys hunting at?
So where I am, I'm hunting around 5,500 feet, somewhere okay. In that range, 4,500 to 6,500 on average, Depends if they're at the top of the mountain or the snow came and the fog pushed them down or something like that, then they can be, 1,500 feet lower than what they usually are.
Awesome. So Brandon, you spent some time out there this fall. How long were you out there exactly?
I was out there for 22 days.
So what's that like, just being able to pick up and go out there for a while?
It was pretty neat. It was kind of weird after about 2 weeks because I felt like I should be working, but I had the opportunity to not work and do that. So it was pretty cool. It was different because we were, we were staying in a big outfitter tent. So we were sleeping on cots and little air mattresses, and you wake up and it's 20 degrees and you're like, and just not normal living. You don't have your normal routine. It's just kind of bare bones, wake up and brush your teeth and rinse with a bottle of water. And if you're lucky, you get back with enough time at night to make some hot water and take a shower. So it's definitely an experience, but I'd definitely do it again. It's not anything to be afraid of, per se. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's totally. You mentioned that it's 20 degrees in the morning, and then like the swings though. I mean, it gets super hot then in the afternoon in comparison.
Yeah, you can start. There was mornings when we went out when it was in the teens, and you've got long johns on, you're dressed heavy, and you get out to your, you drive to your spot, you get out, you start hiking, and you're warming up, and by 10, 11 o'clock, you know, it's could be 50 or 60 degrees. There was a couple days it probably was in the 70s. I mean, it was hot. You're wishing you were in shorts and a t-shirt hiking around, but it's definitely, you got to dress right and have the right gear to stay comfortable and, you know, just to perform as good as you can.
Awesome. And so, and I was really excited for the opportunity to get Owen in on the podcast because he happens to be here at HQ. And so Owen, you were out there the whole time that Brandon was out there hunting?
Yeah. So like Brandon said, we were together the whole time. I got to camp about a day or two before he did, and we all left at the same time. So, you know, it was a great experience to be there, you know, spend time with each other, you know, haven't seen him in over a year almost. And
yeah. That's awesome. The camaraderie, you know, sharing the hunt together. And so, you know, knowing that you guys spent, you know, 3 weeks out there grinding a little bit, the cool thing is that we can really talk about how things changed, you know, over the course of the season. So, Brandon, I want you to dive in a little bit about just the different, you know, timing of hunting and what you noticed and start to give some suggestions and feedback for guys listening on how they can be successful on public land, do it yourself.
So going into it, you know, you can kind of take a good guess. You know, your first, and this relates to any season for hunting any game, your first couple days, your first week, you know, your animals are going to be more active, more talkative. But the first week of elk season they're just out there. They're starting to look, the bulls are starting to look for cows. They're starting to group up, and it's easier to say find them. But it's still not easy to find them. What we found was the first week, we actually saw some elk. We called just a smaller bull in, but he wouldn't come close enough. And we really just had a lot of good experiences finding the elk. But then come the second week, it was like everything just shut up. They weren't bugling. You know, you might get lucky and hear a bugle first thing in the morning, and you go after it, you spend an hour hiking towards, you know, where you thought you heard this bugle, and then nothing. You know, you're kind of just sitting there looking around, looking for sign, looking at the maps, trying to pick where you want to go and where you think they might be, you know, trying to find water, trying to figure out what they're eating, and just, you know, trying to find them. And we probably went a good 5 or 6 days, and we did not have a good encounter. We went 5 or 6 days, didn't see or hear elk. I mean, it was, that second week was definitely tougher. But then come the third week, probably the break of us just pretty much getting like exhausted from, you know, not seeing anything was, we were driving down the one road, and way off in the distance, it was on private land, there was a bunch of elk in this field. And we're like, oh, and we're driving down the road, and we actually passed, Owen's dad, and we stopped and talking to him, and he had just shot a mule deer that morning, and he's like, you guys got to go back and look at all the elk in this field. I'm like, yeah, we saw them. So we actually went back again, and we parked, and we were just glassing them from the road, and we shut the truck off, and these elk are probably a good 1,000 yards away, and you can hear them bugling. And we're like, where was this like yesterday? Because they weren't in that field for 2 weeks when we were there, and all of a sudden, there they are. So we're looking at the maps. Okay, where are these elk coming from? How are they getting there? Well, these elk were just right on the edge. They came down into the green grass to feed, and above that was all, you know, just high mountain, and that's where they were coming from. So we figured out, you know, where can we park to get in on these elk? So kind of skipping that, but the third week was definitely probably the best week for us. We definitely got into the elk, and we had some good experiences, and they were bugling, they were talking. You could start to see guys, you know, that were there camping at other sites, you know, they had success. You know, you drive down into town and you see guys going by with elk in the back of their truck. So definitely seemed like the third week things were really starting to happen, and the rut was kicking in, if not in full swing, for the third week there. So third week was pretty prime.
So third week, Brandon, what month are we at, and where are we at in the cycle here?
So third week, that would be the second last to the last week of September. I'm trying to think. I got, I got home, I think it was October 1st. So it was probably really that last week of September that it was really going on.
So you're talking like the peak foliage and some chance of snow and stuff at this time of year then?
Yeah, there was a couple times when we were actually up higher in elevation during the whole trip, actually. You know, you get up higher in elevation, you'd find a dusting of snow. But then again, afternoon, 60 degrees. You wake up the next morning and, you know, we'd hike to a spot and things were slow. So we'd be sitting there, we'd make some breakfast or something, take a nap, and it'd start flurrying. So you have just a big variation in temperature change. I mean, it could be warm at night and warm the next day, or it could be warm at night and cold the next day. It's kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah, there's some huge climate swings there. So I'm going to back up a little bit here. Owen, and I don't want you to give up your spots here, but from where you guys live out there to where you hunt, how far are we talking away from?
So we're about 6 hours from where we are. You know, any area I really consider, you know, south central to central Montana is some of the prime elk hunting. If you get into the western part of the state more, you know, you're getting into bigger mountains, more rugged terrain. But the big thing is what I consider is the wolves. The wolves have decimated our population between moose and elk.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In the western part of Montana, especially up where I am. Compared to 20 years ago, the population used to be out the wall, but now it has just dropped tremendously in the past, you know, even 5 years, 10 years ago, you know, it was great, but not anymore.
Yeah, I know the wolves are a real hot topic in certain other parts of the country too. So for you guys, you said you're like 6 hours away from where you hunt. Like, so what was your tactic on finding places to hunt, and how did you scout prior to the season, or did you?
So what we did is we have spring bear season during the month of May, and we went over and checked it out. We ran into just rain and snow the whole entire time. So we did a lot of road driving, just looking out, checking the areas, looking at all the roads. And some parts of Montana, they have seasonal roads. So we ran into the time frame where we were able to drive back the roads that were open in the spring, but not the fall. So we were looking for, we looked for just rubs, heavily traveled trails. The big thing that we were looking for were rubs with hair in it, where it would show that bulls were there the previous year, rutting and not just scraping their velvet off.
Okay, that's
and,
cool.
Yeah, another big thing we used was Onyx Hunt. We used that a lot. Just looking at the terrain, try to find some kind of bull, just a dished out part of the mountain, mile or two from trailhead.
Okay, so you were looking for terrain features, and then is that where you guys would go in the morning to hunt and listen and things like that? How did you do that?
Yeah, so pretty much at the start of the trip, Owen and Greg, they had areas that they picked, you know, from being there in the spring that they thought looked good and, you know, promising. So we go in, hike around, and you're talking putting on miles. You're putting miles on the boots. And you're also talking about getting away from where everyone else wants to go, you know, everywhere that's easy. So you're not going in for a couple hours. You're going in for a full day and the next full day. But we go in, we check these areas just, you know, for fresh sign and trying to figure out why they're there. If you do find fresh sign, okay, why are they here? Where are they bedding? You know, where are they going? How far are they going every day? And just where are they?
Yeah, so that's one of the biggest thing I learned with elk. I mean, you have to A, locate them, and then B, the big problem is if you screw something up and you bump them, I mean, they have got some long legs and they can move. I mean, and they can be two valleys over in no time, right? So I wanted to talk about, and this is previous conversations with you, Brandon, strategy, like in getting to some of the theories here with the elk. So I'm all about the theories here. So I know we talked about in the past, one of the best times to listen for elk is when it's dark, right?
Yeah. So like that first week, like I said, we heard them bugling, but it was like the first couple hours of the morning. Usually by 10, 11 o'clock, it was just kind of, you know, what do? You keep hiking and looking for sign. But it's definitely that first couple hours. There were some mornings that we definitely should have got out of bed a little earlier and, you know, gone and listened and just drive to a overlook on the road and just listen. You don't hear nothing. Drive somewhere else. But definitely getting out early in the morning, you know, before everyone else wants to get up and put the pressure on them. Get out there early and listen and, you know, studying the maps, you know, where do you think they're going to be? Just pick an area pretty much that you think is going to be good and promising and going and listening.
No, that's good. So, and just like just to drive with the point that I'm trying to make is that, you know, most guys, and especially once you're a couple of days into the hunt, I mean, it beats the crap out of you. And you won't really know what kind of demand that there is, you know, with the altitude and just, you know, sweating and everything else until you go out there and do it. So it gets difficult to get up. But if you actually get up early in the morning, or like I've experienced this myself, where like when you first wake up, you know, if you're in the heart of elk country, you'll hear them bugling at nighttime, just like the white-tailed deer, you know, they do a lot of running activity at night. And if you can get your butt out of bed and pinpoint where they're at, it's a great time. And then, like you said, I mean, just like turkeys, you know, the elk, they get quiet, you know, after that morning, the 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning, things just get quiet. The sun's up, it gets hot. And a lot of times it's hard to get anything going. You know, one of the other things I wanted to talk about is you mentioned, Brandon, like going to these lookouts where you can hear, you get the vantage point. And this is one of my theories on elk that I haven't heard people really talk about, but those are like the most convenient points to go and rip a bugle. And as you guys know, I mean, they're able to really pinpoint where you're at. And my theory is that, you know, these older herd bulls, like they know something's not right when you're bugling from like these perfect vantage points. So what do you think about that? You thought about that?
I mean, you know, I agree with you at some points, but then this rifle season, for instance, there were elk tracks that walked right out onto an outcropping where it was just like, you know, why would an elk walk out here, turn around, and walk back? But, you know, at night, kind of bugling, I kind of feel like you might have a better system. The elk are more active, especially if you do it almost in a saddle where an elk may be transferring areas compared to if you were just on some peak of a ridge, you know. If you get in a saddle, they could be coming over, you know. The bull's been there, you know, it's like somebody coming through your town yelling. You know something's different if it never happened before usually.
Yeah, absolutely. And once you step into their bedroom, and that, like, you know, the rut time of the year, I mean, they're pretty territorial, would you guys say?
Yeah, I mean, once the bulls are find their cows and have their cows, they're, you know, like I have a video of there was probably 70 to 80 elk in this one field, and we're 1,000 yards away, and these elk are just screaming their heads off, and we're watching them in the binos, and there's bulls pushing bulls around and bulls moving their little groups of cows around. I'd definitely say they do get really territorial, if not, you know, very territorial when it's the right time of the year and, you know, you're seeing it happen. I mean, it's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, awesome. So how did you guys cope with the other hunters putting pressure on public land?
Well,
so basically, I mean, everybody during archery season, a lot of guys are quiet about their spots. You might tell the guys, you know, what you're hearing, but you aren't telling them where you were at all. You know, rifle season's a whole different game, though. I've learned it's, you know, a lot of people drive the road in Montana, drive the dirt roads, and you're open with your spots for the most part. You know, if you aren't more than a mile off the road, you aren't afraid to tell people where you're at. But as far as archery season goes, as long as you're the first one there to a spot, usually guys will leave you alone. They'll go to a different spot. They won't come in and tramps where you are.
Okay. So you're saying, like, if you're parked somewhere, guys usually just don't even pull up behind you?
Yeah, they usually just leave you go, and they'll just go find another spot. They figured this area is hunted pretty hard.
It's almost kind of just like, you know, you're respecting mm-hmm. other hunters. You know, we did it a lot. We'd go out, we'd pick a spot on the map at night. We'd go out there in the morning, and there's already a truck parked there. You're like, well, you know, we really want to go here, but we'll go somewhere else. And there's just so much land out there, there's really no need to park on top of someone and go in. But we've had times, too, when we were way back. And, for instance, we were probably 2 miles back one day, and we were up on this, just almost like a big overlook, like just a cliff looking down to this valley. And there's a little stream down there, and we thought, that kind of looks like there's a wallow down there. Like, we're going to go check it out. So we take a long walk, probably 2-3 miles out around, and we get down there, and we thought we heard, we actually bugled up top from this clear cut just to see, you know, well, if anything called back or anything, and we drop down into this stream. We're walking up along the edge of the stream, and we look up ahead, and there's two other hunters there. So at that point, you're like, you know, it's kind of like, you're almost like, okay, you know, where were they parked? Or, you know, where'd they come in from that they got way back here too? Because there's so many places to park, and then you get out and there's four or five other guys parked at your spot. I mean, it's, you kind of run into a little bit of both. Like, some days you'll go to an area and there's nothing around, and there's nothing and no one, and some days you're the first one there and you're bumping into hunters all over the place. It's kind of a little bit of both, I guess.
It's a little bit like being in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it can be, yeah. And I actually said that too at one point. You know, we go in the morning, first one's there, and then you come out at night, and there's, at the one spot we came out, there was probably 5, 6, 7 other guys parked there. And so it can be a little of your typical public land hunting.
Sure. Owen, I got a question here. What do you think is the hardest part about being successful on an elk hunt?
It probably would sum up just about to be, you know, are you willing to get after it or not? If you're not afraid to get up, put your time in, and get back in, you're not going to be successful. Usually, a majority of it is, if you get up in the morning early, you get back in a couple miles, and you know how to call someone at least.
How bad do you want it?
That's great.
Very well.
Yeah. And what's your thoughts on what the hardest part is?
The hardest part is how bad do you want it? Because, like I said, getting there that first couple days, you want it. You're fresh. You know, you want to get out there and put the boots on the ground and put miles on. And then after 4 or 5 days, it really starts to set in. You're like, man, I'm tired. And you kind of, there was a couple days that we definitely got a little lazy, and you're like, you almost got to kick yourself in the butt. And like, you know, you wanted to do this, you got to get out and do it, you know. I did a good bit of reading and, you know, just looking for tips and stuff. And a lot of guys say, you know, they could tell you exactly everything to do to go out and kill an elk, but if you don't want to do it and you're tired, you can't do it. You know, you got to put the time in. I read a lot that, you know, only 10% of elk tags are filled every year. And a majority of that success is guys that are putting in 10 plus days a year elk hunting. So, and I probably hunted for 18 days and didn't kill an elk. So it's not easy.
No, it's not easy at all. So, and that's the thing. So, I mean, how bad do you want it? And so what you guys can do if you're thinking about doing an elk hunting trip is get yourself physically prepared to do it. And there's the mental aspect too, but you got to train. From personal experience, you know, one of the most important things to actually get out there and train, I've tried doing the, you know, the cardio stuff, the, you know, rowing and stair climbers, stuff like that. And there's definitely an advantage to that, but I don't think that you can beat replicating what you're doing by taking a weighted ruck march and just hiking in the mountains and things like that to get yourself ready. And, you know, and then the acclimation is a whole different animal. So, so you guys are hunting the elk at like the 5,500, 6,000 range, or is that just the mule deer?
You know, it's two different parts of the state. Where I was hunting mule deer, it was about 5,500, and it was steep, ugly mountains.
Okay.
We were hunting almost the same elevation in central Montana, and it was just, you know, some parts would be steep, but it'd be rolling hills almost, you know.
Big, long mountains.
Big long mountains, you know. Okay. It wouldn't be near as rugged.
Yeah, so it wasn't absolutely killing you as far as, like, getting gas for air then?
Not typically. I mean, we had some days where we were probably up around 8,000 feet.
Yeah.
And you can feel, even just walking at that elevation, it's,
you know, you can,
not being used to it, you get winded a little easier. It's definitely happens.
Yeah, you can come out of some pretty steep draws. We spent a day or two even just trying to go fast over blowdowns where they're waist high. You're going all you can, and it's just slowing you down.
Yeah, there's some of that terrain gets really technical when there's blowdowns. And I know that there was a stop on the whole timber industry, and so it really magnified stuff. We found that in Colorado. It was crazy. And then when we were out elk hunting this past year, you could hear chainsaws running, and you could hear the when they're dumping logs in the trucks, it just ripped down the mountain. I don't know if it was similar up in Montana too, but
yeah,
yeah, it was like full swing. They're trying to clean that stuff up, but when you try to go through that and you get off the cow trails and things, it's it kills you. It kills you trying to navigate that, you know. And then you have these elk with these giant legs, and once they're spooked, man, they're gone, you know. So that something we talked about a little bit, Brandon, is that, you know, once you locate the elk and they go quiet, you know, what do you do? And the way you described it is like hunting Bigfoot. So let's talk about hunting Bigfoot here with the elk.
Yeah, it's like you heard them, but you never seen them. So where are they? And how do you find something that, you know, you heard, but you're talking about, you know, here again, you're comparing east to west. In the east, you know, I don't have very many spots that I hunt that I can't hear a road or I can't hear someone close a car door. It's all very close quarters. Out there, you can hear something and you can hear for miles. So you just pretty much, a lot of what we did, we'd heard them, you know, they shut up, we look at the map. Okay, where do we think they are and why were they there? So then you make a move to that point, you know, and the whole time you're just looking for fresh sign. You know, were they here? Where'd they come from? Where'd they go? So it's a lot of, you know, just putting the footwork in pretty much. I mean, hiking and hiking and hiking and more hiking and tripping and falling and more hiking. It's yeah. It's just a lot of legwork.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, all right, let's talk about sign a little bit, because whitetail sign compared to elk sign is like it's night and day. I mean, when you see elk sign, like, you know there's elk in the area. So what kind of stuff do you guys key in on and look for when you're hunting?
So one of my big things is, you know, first of all, you know, you're looking for the rubs with hair in it, and you know either A, they were there this year, or they were there last year, and they're probably gonna come back. But something that I ran into a lot is when you'd be walking along and I would get a strong smell of elk. You can smell when there's been a bull in the area and they've urinated, and you smell that and you know they've been there. That's the big thing. Yeah, elk
yeah,
stick.
Yeah, yeah. If you ever smell that smell, and when you smell it, like you know exactly what we're talking about though. Yeah.
It smells like cows or goats. It's very distinct.
Yeah, and a bunch of them.
Yeah,
one bull can smell like a dozen of them.
Yeah, it's like a nasty, musty smell. And then to add to that too, like, you know, obviously wallows are a great sign. You can see those, you know, it looks like a mud pit. And then tracks. I mean, they're such large animals with big hooves, you know, and if you find any muddy areas or there's a crossing, if they were in there recently, like, I mean, they're herd animals. So it's usually not just one or two elk. I mean, it's going to be just mowed down. Looks like a cow path out in the middle of the wilderness. And, so, I mean, my experience is that when you find elk and you find that sign, like, hunt that area. But you have to be very cautious of the wind, which includes the thermals, you know, and your approach. You know, the old adage where, you know, an elk might see you once or hear you once, but they're only smell you once, you know. And once they got you, that's where it gets really tough. It's a gut check as a hunter, because when they get quiet and you don't hear them bugling, and then you know there's some sign there, but then you start to second guess yourself. Well, is that sign old? Do they leave? Or are they still here? And we're just playing cat and mouse. So, Brandon, let's talk about, I know you had one really awesome encounter with the herd bull, and you didn't seal the deal. But I want you to tell that story and just talk about what you guys could have done different to have sealed the deal on that.
So it was the third week. That was that day we were driving down the road, and we seen all those elk out in that field. So we're talking about it, you know, how can we get on those elk? Where are those elk going, and how do we get there? So what do? We go back to camp, we eat dinner, and we get on Onyx, and we're looking at the maps, you know, and they were definitely coming off public land. There's no doubt, because we saw them on public land. So pretty much we picked a spot where we could park, where we thought was the closest spot we could park. And we got in there early in the morning, which turned out not to be early enough. And we just started hiking down close to these fields. And it was probably a good mile and a half to where, you know, we thought we'd be getting close. Well, we weren't, but, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes of walking from the truck, and we could hear these elk bugle, and we're way above them. So we're like, if, you know they were down there all night. They were running, screaming their heads off, you know, just rutting. So we just keep going towards the bugles every now and then. We stop and listen, you know, where exactly are these elk, looking at the maps, trying to guess where they're going to come up. And we were getting down close, you know, you could clearly hear these elk. You know, you didn't even have to listen for them anymore. And we're getting into some more open timber, and you kind of run into, like, a lot of, like, grassy meadows out there. And we were in a rush, and there's a lot of cattle on public land out there. And so it's not uncommon to get into cattle, and that's another thing to you got to watch for, because if you spook cattle and the cattle run and there's elk close, the elk are smart, you know, they're going to spook too. So we're getting down close. We can hear these bulls screaming. And sure enough, got in the cattle, spooked the cattle, and the cattle ran off. And we're like, oh, crap, you know. Well, these elk are still bugling. And we're coming across this open, kind of grassy timber area. And I don't remember exactly the context of things that happened at that moment, but pretty much we looked up and we saw an elk. And we're looking at it, we pull the binos up, it was a spike bull. So we're standing there talking about, you know, how we want to move forward, you know, checking the wind, making sure, you know, we're not going to get busted just off that alone. And he kind of walks up towards the mountain into the big timber, and we're like, all right, let's make a move, let's try and get closer to him. So we get closer, and here comes another spike bull. So we're like, all right. And at this point, we're thinking, you know, maybe we can get a double on these spike bulls. So we're kind of sitting there talking, and Owen dropped back, and I moved up ahead a little bit, and we're trying to call the spike bull in. And pretty much, I didn't see it from where I was, but Owen saw it. I seen these two spike bull go. I seen a smaller bull, and then I seen a really nice bull, which I'm assuming would have been the herd bull for that certain group of elk. But what I didn't see that Owen saw was about 15 or 20 cows went up through ahead of these elk, and these bulls were just behind them. So going back to, you know, I was probably about 100 yards from these elk at that point. So going back to what could have we done, we could have got out of bed sooner and got in there sooner. And, you know, that was our first time in there. So you're taking a guess at how long it's going to take you to get so far, and then you run into blowdowns, and blowdowns can really slow you down and cost you a lot of time because you just can't make any ground. And pretty much, again, we should have just been there sooner. Have we been 15, 20 minutes sooner, probably would have been way more ideal, but I think if we would have been 2 minutes sooner, we would have been definitely slinging some arrows at some elk, because, I mean, we were there. We seen them, we smelled them, and we heard them. I mean, what more can you ask for besides more time?
Yeah, that's cool. And that's what it's all about, is getting into the elk and, you know, having those opportunities. And obviously, it's not a failed hunt just because you didn't kill something. Owen, what's your takeaway from the last, you said this is the first year you elk hunted, or this is the second?
This is the second season I would have been elk hunting. Yeah, this is my first year as a resident, so I definitely spent a lot more time in the elk woods. You know, I talked to a lot more people that knew what they were doing.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a great way to learn, is to talk to guys that are successful and learn from them, learn from their mistakes. What mistakes have you learned over the last two seasons that you could recommend and that you would do different now?
Number one is get out of bed. Get out of bed, as you know, if you think 4:30 is the time that you need to be up, get up at 3:30, because you can never be up early enough. It seems like, you know, a lot of guys try to cover their scent every time you wash your clothes or take a shower, try to, but you're going to stink. When you're hunting hard, you're going to stink, and you just got to
hunt the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to hunt the wind, and don't be afraid to get after it.
Awesome.
It's all how hard you want it.
And what calls were you guys running when you guys were elk hunting?
So I use a I use Phelps game calls. They're I think I'm not sure what state they're out of, but they're somewhere out of the West, and that they're a great product. You know, we got a lot of elk to answer to them. I was using mouth reeds mostly, or just mouth calls, and I had a bugle tube that I would use my mouth calls in. You know, some bugle tubes have reeds in them, some don't, but if an elk's into it, usually they'll be able to just about anything.
Yeah, just like a turkey, I guess. And I'm glad you said what you said, because one of the things I've talked to different elk hunters, and maybe you guys have heard this as well, you get like this Primos Hoochie Mamas, and they sound like the perfect elk mule, cow mule, but
everybody uses them,
and yeah. The elk have heard that, you know, meow 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 meow, you know, and that just tells you right there. I mean, you're trying to hunt and kill a mature bull elk, you know, or a spike, whatever, and kudos to you guys for not being afraid to do that too. I mean, I haven't killed an elk yet, so like I'm not gonna be too picky when the opportunity arises, but you have to, as I always say with the whitetail stuff, give yourself that slight edge, stack the chips in your favor, and you know, a diaphragm call, you can have that inflection in the tone.
Exactly.
And it's not constantly the same, and so I'm glad to hear that. Do you guys have anything else with elk that you want to talk about? I want to talk about a couple other species out in the West too.
You know, elk will probably come up again. You know, elk tie into everything. You know,
sure.
It don't matter what you're trying to hunt. Somehow you always end up thinking about elk hunting if you're hunting anything else.
So. Yeah, awesome.
Comparing East to West, I would say hunting elk is like hunting turkeys in the East. And I was told a lot of people disagree with that, but being out there and doing it, you pretty much do the same thing. Yeah. You pick a spot, you go into the woods, you call, and if they don't call back or, you know, it's just not working, you go find somewhere else. And we do the same thing in the East for turkey. You know, we go, you know, upstate into bigger public lands. You pick a spot, you go, you call, you listen, nothing calls back, you go somewhere else and call. And you do some of that, you do a lot of that in the West. But
yeah, it's like hunting an 800-pound turkey with the extreme sense of smell. That's what it comes down to.
That's what makes it so hard, right? Right, because they can smell you over a hill where a turkey can't see over that hill, you know, and definitely makes it challenging. Well, you like the turkey hunt, right?
Yeah, I love turkey hunting. It's you know, if I had to pick one thing back East here, I'd probably pick, you know, turkey hunting over the whitetail rut almost.
Okay, so what's your experience hunting turkeys out in Montana?
So where I am up in the northwest corner, we got a large turkey population. You know, there's not a big turkey demand almost for turkey hunters. So, you know, we got the Merriams, white tip, some buff. But me personally, I live in a town about 8 miles from the Canadian border, and I'm one out of maybe a handful of turkey hunters that takes it serious. And it shows that they just do not get the attention that, you know, they would back here, back East. You can go out and call, and almost always you have, not only do you have the number of turkeys to respond to you, but they're, you know, almost don't seem smart, as near smart. They just respond to almost anything. And, you know, the greatest day of turkey hunting I had this year was I had almost 10 birds on me all at one time, you know.
Oh, wow. Like Toms and Jakes and
Toms
stuff?
Toms and Jakes. You know, there was a couple long beards, a couple Jakes all together.
That's got to be a rush to see that.
Yeah. The Toms were just barely out of range, and the Jakes were to my right, and I was trying to get my dad a bird. He has yet to shoot a spring gobbler. So
really,
yeah, I've been trying on that. I got a gobbler in the spring. Wasn't a long beard or anything. It was a whole lot of running. It was about 5 minutes of nothing but running and chasing after these turkeys.
What kind of terrain are you hunting with the turkeys?
So you can get, you know, you can get into some mountainous terrain, some serious stuff. Where I shot my mule deer, walking in that trail, you know, you're at, you know, probably around 4,500 feet. I seen turkey tracks up there this winter, and in the springtime there, you know, 3,500 feet. And just walking around on flat, open ponderosa pine, grassy meadows. And
yep. It's the same kind of stuff the elk like to come out and feed in.
Anything you can imagine an elk in, a turkey's going to be there.
Yeah, okay. And are they pretty vocal then when you're calling?
Yeah, Merriam seem to be a lot more vocal compared to the Easterns that we have, so.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that's due in part because of the pressure that we get out here too, that it just makes the turkeys, you know, shut up and clam up. And a lot of people say, you know, that the turkeys, you know, they don't seem as smart out West, but I think again, it comes down to just the pressure Yeah, pressure is a big thing, and that's one of the things I love about out west is that you can, I mean, if you want to put the time in and the effort, you can get, you can truly get away from people, you know. Brandon, did you hunt any other things than the elk when you were out there?
When I was out, I had elk tag, deer tag, which is good for mule deer or whitetail, and bear tag. So obviously we spent the majority of our time elk hunting, but if you're elk hunting and you see mule deer, all of a sudden it turned into a mule deer hunt.
Nice.
We actually did have two good bear experiences there. Owen.
What's a good bear experience? I'd like to hear this.
Well, hunting bears in the east, I saw two bears out there in
2 weeks.
2 weeks, pretty much, yeah. And
black bears, we're talking?
Black bear, yeah. They have a lot of color phase out there, which we didn't see.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I was hoping for. Me and Owen kind of made a deal. The first, I got the shot at the first elk we called in, or he got the shot at the first bear, since he never shot an archery bear. Unless it was a color phase, and I was going to push Owen out of the way color phase. But, so, the first bear experience, we were just walking, and we were actually in an area, there was a lot of elk sign, but it was all seemed like a couple weeks old, and it was just crazy that you could see that much elk sign, and we didn't hear a peep, and we're standing there talking, and I kept hearing this walking, and Owen told me I was crazy, and I said, no, I'm hearing this, and sure enough, I'm looking, and it's real, like, sunny, it's kind of hard to see, and boom, up hops this bear walking across the log. I'm like, Owen, there's a bear. He's like, no, there's not. I'm like, there's a bear. So he finally sees the bear. We move into about 60 yards together. I was running the camera, so I stayed back, and he got in closer to about 40 yards, and I'm looking, and I'm thinking, I see him draw back, and I'm at my point, 60 yards, I'm thinking, if you weren't there, I would be throwing an arrow at this thing. And he draws back, and his angle was the bear was just quartered away too hard. So he didn't take a shot, and the bear kind of got a little antsy. He might have got a little bit of our wind, and he got out of there. And then the next week, we were just walking, actually, into the same area where we had that good experience with those bulls. And we just stopped, and I looked, and I was like, holy crap, there's a bear up in the blowdowns. And he... same thing. My angle, I was running the camera, looked great. I would have shot, but where he was standing, there was just too many trees and blowdowns in the way, so that bear got away too. So having two good experiences like that with bear in 2 weeks versus, you know, I've hunted bear for a couple years in PA and didn't see a peep of a bear is pretty neat.
That's awesome. And it's cool you guys got to share that experience together. Now, as far as the deer side, did you get a mule deer this year?
I did. I got a mule deer.
I thought I saw a pretty nice picture. So, mm-hmm. Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. So, I went out a total of four times this year for mule deer.
Okay.
The first time I had a little incident. I got about a mile from the trailhead and I ran into a grizzly.
Okay. So, let's hear about that.
So yeah. So you know, just a average day. I never been up to this spot. I'm just gonna go on top of the mountain and just go out there and try to glass down over. And I was going along, stop, take a break, dressed over heavily, like usual, and heard something down below me. Went ahead to try to see it a little bit better, and I still had an elk tag, I still had my deer tag, I was ready to see what it was, and when it came to the opening, no doubt in my mind, I knew exactly what it was, and I was yelling at it right away, and it just didn't like me there, and it took off into a straight charge almost instantly, and it got about 10, 15 feet, and I had to put a little stop to it.
All right.
But, yeah.
That'd make your butthole pucker, man. Holy crap. Yeah. I don't think I heard about that story.
Yeah, if you're ever out west and you run into something like a grizzly bear or a mountain lion or even a black bear, something that you aren't supposed to shoot or aren't allowed to shoot, and you have to do it in an order, it's now can be justified in the order of self-defense. So if anything like that would happen to you, you just got to go back to the truck, call the warden, and, you know, as long as you're 100% honest with them, everything's going to work in your favor, you know. As soon as you try to, you know, start exaggerating something or, you know, anything like that,
yeah,
it's going to go all against you. But, yeah, I had to do, like, a record statement, type up a little summary of what happened, and you know, everything's been fine. I haven't had no backlash or nothing.
Yeah, that's gotta be
hike in there with the game warden and the sheriff too.
Yeah, we went back in and we took his head and took his four paws to be examined. You know, just study, because there's no grizzly bear season yet in the lower 48. So
right.
Wyoming tried to have one, Idaho tried to have one, and you know, I'm just wondering how many more people are gonna need to be munched on before.
So is this the reason at the beginning of the podcast you said, yeah, I've killed a bear or two? And I was like, well, is it one or is it two?
Well, I've actually killed a total of three black bear.
Okay.
I've killed two in PA here, and I should have three, but we had a little malfunction. The gun didn't go off.
Oh, no. Okay.
When it was a chip yard, 40-yard shot.
Oh, man.
And then this past season out there, I was on full draw 2 weeks in a row on a black bear with Brandon, and didn't work out, and I went back home, and the third week, me and my buddy, I had a whitetail doe tag, and we went up, saw some doe, went up after him, and we were just standing there. I was wearing my jeans and my cowboy boots, and all of a sudden, you know, here comes this black bear through the divot, and I stopped him and tried to pick me out, and it just stopped then again in 30 yards and just let one fly, and you know, ran about 40 yards, piled up, and you know, easy drag to the truck, got lucky, didn't have to pack it out or anything.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So that was archery with it as well.
Yeah, that was September 29th. It was snowing and with a bow.
Wow. It blows my mind how it snows so early in the season out there compared to on the East Coast.
Yep.
Let's hear your mule deer story.
So, you know, that first time I ran into the grizzly, the second time tried to pick going up on almost the same ridge, and ran into a bad scenario, too thick, went what I thought would take 3 hours, took five, and I didn't even get halfway. So the next time I went in, I came in from a whole different angle on a trailhead, and I thought, you know, instead of going, trying to climb to the top and glass down over, I'm going to glass. You know, glassing's a big thing out west. It's, if you want to see a lot of terrain, you know, just get yourself a good pair of optics. So
what are you running?
So we have a... Oh shoot! I'm not sure what the spotting scope is exactly, but
you're running a spotting scope,
yeah,
so you can really.
Yeah, I had a spotting scope. I have a Swarovski, and I really like it. Vortex and Swarovski, I think, are two of the best, you know, higher dollar, you know, best optics that are out there. And I searched for about 3 hours. I was looking at this big mountainside, and finally I picked out a doe and looked down, and I saw my buck. You know, he was about a mile away. So it was far.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and we dropped down and started going up the head, and the fog just dropped in, and, you know, instead of spooking them, we could only see 40 yards, we backed out, and I said, you know, I'm going to come back tomorrow, it's Saturday, you know, hopefully nobody's in here.
It's tough to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it was hard to do, but, you know, in such big country,
where
you just spot them from a mile, you don't want to, you know, there's no trees, no nothing to hide you.
Right.
So we backed out and came back the next day, and we got in spot, you know, and the fog was still down about halfway over the mountain. So I'm like, well, you know, what are the odds of us spotting something? And I was glassing for about an hour, and I spotted up a doe. And about another half hour later, I spotted my buck up. He was laying down, facing straight away from me, not moving. And I'm like, there's no way that can be a deer. Zoomed in on him to 60 power from 20. And, you know, sure enough, turned his rack. I'm like, I start shaking, sitting there in the snow again, buck fever. But, so I started my hike. My dad said he ain't going up there again unless I shoot it. So I got to sit there and watch through the spotting scope. And it took me about 2 hours to go a mile and a half on the ground. And I got from ridge to ridge from him about 330 yards. And I'm shooting a 300 rum with a loophole. And one first shot dropped him, but he got back up. And I gave him another one. That was it right there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So this past year you killed the bear?
Yep, I killed a
and the mule deer.
Yep. Mule deer, black bear, grizzly bear.
Yeah, that's a heck of a year. So you guys just didn't quite get the elk, but you guys were definitely into them. So
yeah.
Are you guys planning on doing a elk hunt this year?
Definitely.
That Brandon wants to come out. You know, I'm gonna be hunting elk again in Montana. I'm hoping to do some preference point for some different states. Apply for another state for some deer and elk, possibly, you know.
Awesome. But, 22 days again?
So whatever it takes.
It's great. Well, if you're young and you can do it, man, that's awesome. Brandon, you shot yourself a mule deer as well.
Yeah, I did. It was actually the last
last evening that we were out.
The last evening we were there. It was kind of cool. The two other guys that I went out with from PA here, we were all hunting together, and Owen and his dad, Greg. So it was pretty cool. We just hiked in, actually, to where Greg killed his mule deer, and we walked right through a logging operation, and it was pretty cool. When Greg shot his mule deer, he was dragging it out, or packing it out. The guy actually came driving in and gave him a ride back out to his truck.
Well, that's nice.
And so he talked to this guy and, you know, got some insight about the elk and the mule deer, and, you know, kind of how to hunt, because this guy lived there his whole life, and that's what he did. He logged and he hunted. So he gave us some good insight. So we just went back in there. Greg had a feeling that, you know, maybe we could find some. He found some elk, so I thought maybe we can find some more, maybe find some elk. So we went back in there, and it was just a cool night. We were all sitting there eating dinner, and I thought, you know, at that point, everyone says, it, you know, it's not about killing something, but at the end of the day, you go hunting to kill something. But I was just like, man, this is cool. We're all here together. We're all hunting. You know, we all made it this long. We're all tired, but this is just neat. So we're hiking out, and not to mention, you see a lot of mule deer out there when you're hunting. Mule deer and whitetail, you see a lot of them. So a lot of the, I didn't see very many buck per se, but these doe, you can walk, if, as long as you don't stop and stare at them, you can walk 30 yards from them, and they'll just stand there and keep eating them once you walk by. And we're walking out, and we're seeing a ton of mule deer. And we get to this one bend in the road, and I'm looking ahead, and I'm like, is that a deer standing on the road? And my uncle pulls up his binos. He's like, yeah, that's a buck. So I just, everyone stayed back. I snuck up the road. And he was standing on the road, and I ranged him, and he was 50-some yards. And I was like, I could probably get a shot. By the time I put my rangefinder down, he walked up onto the side. So I ran up behind this pine tree and kind of peeking my head around the pine tree, and he's above me now, and I'm thinking, yeah, he's about 50 yards again. So I step out and I draw back, and it just worked out perfect. He kind of hit the horizon. I thought I had a good shot on him at first initially, but I shot and he just kind of stood there. And I thought, there's no way I just missed that thing. It looked like I nailed him. And he starts walking, and I'm like, I guess I missed him. Like, it just looked like I hit him perfect, but I guess I missed him. So I'm like knocking another arrow, and he starts to trot, and he ran about, or trotted about 40 yards, went to run uphill, and fell back downhill. So that was pretty cool. Again, I think he wasn't huge by any means, but it was a cool experience. Everyone was there, all the guys watched it, and best part was we were closer to the truck than where we turned around from. So
that's convenient.
Pretty cool. We didn't even pack it out. We just drug it out PA style. And
about a mile.
Drug it down the road. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And when we're talking roads, we're talking like dirt logging roads. Like, these roads are closed off to the public. Mm-hmm. You know, you can park at the gates and walk in. They're not, you know, PA game land roads where anyone can drive down.
That's so awesome. And that was the last day of your hunt.
That was the last day. We went back to camp that night, got back pretty late, and the next day we quartered them up and loaded the truck and started the 36-hour drive home.
Man, that's a haul. So, yeah, it sounds like you guys had an awesome trip. And, guys, it was a real pleasure to get to sit here and talk about your experiences. And, you know, one of the really cool things, and I want to just say this for the record, you know, these guys are young hunters. They're learning, and we're not going to sugarcoat anything. Like, you know, some of the tactics that we talked about, these are experiences that these guys are learning. And I can't wait, as these guys grow as hunters and learn more things, that we can get on the podcast and share their successes. But you know, for at the age that these guys are, they're putting stuff in the dirt, and they're doing a great job of it. And like I said, it was awesome to get to share these experiences. So do you guys have anything you want to add while we wrap things up right here?
How bad do you want it?
Yeah, how bad do you want it?
Yeah.
Get out and get after it. And anyone can sit down and they can write you a book on how to go kill a deer or an elk or a bear. The best thing that you can do is just to get out and experience it. You know, someone can tell you where to hunt, what tree to sit in, and everything, but there's so much more to it than that. I mean, it's just, you gotta find the time and make the experiences and make it happen and just get out there and hunt.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, that was, it was, like I said, it was a pleasure to talk about these experiences out west. And we are looking forward to getting you guys back again. But I just want to wish you guys a happy and successful season here for 2020. And I hope to hear about a big bull elk that you guys can put down this year. We can talk about that. So, guys, we'll tune back in here in the next episode. And we'll probably get back on the whitetail train. But it was pretty cool to talk about some of these other western species. So thanks for tuning in. And if you guys want to follow up and connect with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Cervicide, that's Cervicide. And if you don't know, that is Latin for deer slayer. And the Whitetail Theories podcast, you know, it's pretty much revolves around whitetails, but really all things hunting. You know, we're sportsmen and we love to hunt and we love to share experiences and help and give knowledge out. So if you have questions, you can just hit us on the DM. Or you can send us an email at info@cervicide.com. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in.